Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Gonna be bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. Gonna be bright.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guest and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you'd like to make during this broadcast, you can email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. Well, I'm certainly hoping it's going to be a bright, sunshiny day soon, because right now it's a snowy, cloudy, cold, freezing night here in Philadelphia. And like I say, just trying to get through this weather, trying to recover from what I call the mini flu that I've had this week, because I did have a flu shot, so I know it's not as bad as if I hadn't had one, but it still was not good. So if I go into a coughing jag during this show, my wonderful guest will have to take over, and that's why I'm introducing you now. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Mary Ann Glynn. Mary Ann, thank you for being back with us tonight.
It's great to be here.
It's so good to have you back.
I was thinking you and I have a similar mission to kind of bring light, as your song said, light and truth to something that is kind of vague and misunderstood or hidden in relationships.
And I think that the word is getting out more now, but I know that, to be honest with you, Mary Ann, you've done so much work in the field of post-traumatic stress disorder and how it's affected, you know, with the terms of people who are narcissists, sociopaths, psychopaths, and what the tie-in is there. But I'm going to be honest with you. You can tell me also, I know up until recent years, I was not that familiar with all of this. I mean, I knew these people, but, you know, there were people who were narcissistic. But it just seems like now there's just so much more knowledge about it. And it explains so many times when people are having toxic relationships, you know, because they're in with that kind of a person, that I see it much more prevalently now. Do you see the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, the term narcissist has become almost common. You know, people, it's around. There are all kinds of websites. There are all kinds of teachings about it. I think it's been kind of difficult to spot because clinically, it's not, you know, none of the diagnoses are really appropriate for some of the stuff that we see that includes abuse. You know, I think the closest thing we have is narcissistic personality disorder, which, you know, it lack of empathy is one of the principal criteria, but that doesn't have to be in the diagnosis. It's one of the criteria. And there's nowhere in the criteria of that diagnosis does it say abuse, right? But what we're talking about are relationships of abuse of some sort. And it's hard to identify because sometimes it can be subtle. And it can, like the questionnaire that I was telling you about, identifies different types of categories of abuse that might not be so apparent to people. But like I say to people, we don't have to call the person a narcissist or an antisocial personality disorder or a psychopath. Right? What we have to do is recognize the abusive effect that it's having on you, the toxic effect, like you said. Like what you have been dealing with all this time is deceit, right? Now, deceit is on my questionnaire. I'm not trying to promote the questionnaire. It's free, right? You know, I'm just trying to educate that, you know, deceit is a form of abuse, you know, because, you know, it's probably the deepest betrayal that someone could experience. And what could be worse than that? You know, what
well,
could be worse
we get
than
into
betrayal?
That, let's start from the beginning. Now, I'm going back to your website on destructive relationship help, which is the link is on this broadcast. People can read it and go to it like I have. And I've been studying it a lot during the week. And you start off by talking about what is a destructive relationship. So just starting there. And some of the factors that you have are, first of all, that they lack empathy, which allows them to serve their own needs no matter how this affects you. It means they cannot perceive or meet your needs if they're different than theirs. It means they're not capable of true emotional connection. One is the lack of conscience and therefore insight and remorse. Lack of conscience is based on lack of empathy. If someone isn't connected to their own emotion, they can't connect to others' emotions. One is that they're reward-driven, and another is they're narcissistic. And it says whether you call them a narcissist, sociopath, psychopath, antisocial, etc., all have narcissistic self-perception, at least internally, even if they aren't overt about it. They must maintain self-perception of being blameless and flawless at all costs, which their partners expected to go along with. Of course, this isn't how mature relationships work, and that's when the abuse starts, whether by subtle manipulation, deceit, or outright hostility. So I think that is a starting point. Where the problem comes in that I find with, you know, many of the women that I work with is that it's not bad all of the time. It's not like it's an evil person who shows up at your door. And, you know, it's like when I used to work with women who have domestic violence, and, you know, before I understood the whole concept of domestic violence, it's not that the guy who is going to abuse you comes to your door for a date, and he says, how are you, and then smacks you in the face. It doesn't start out that way. These guys are very conniving, so they know how to be very affectionate, how to be very loving, how to make you feel like you're so important. You know, that you're the only woman
sometimes
in the world for them.
Extremely so.
You know, usually, now, you can tell me if you think I'm wrong on this. I feel like these guys know how to seek out women who are the most vulnerable of the vulnerable, women who are able to, they can smell you. It's like a shark, you know, smelling blood
radar
in the water. That they recognize when someone's been through turmoil, when someone comes from a background where they're not assertive, where they're, you know, coming from broken homes or broken marriages, and they're just out there waiting to grab you. And they know you.
Absolutely.
I mean, you don't know them, but they know you. And that's why it's so easy to get involved in a relationship like this. They don't come out, you know, they don't start off bad. They start off wonderful. And that's what you're hanging on to the whole time, right?
And you know, they also, I mean, what you described is would be called predator, right? You don't know them, but they know you. Yeah, and yeah, because you're hooked into the, and I mean, that can happen for one of two reasons or both reasons. But it, number one, it might be that, you know, the, this person initially thinks or wants a relationship and somehow thinks they can do it, right? Because a relationship down the road is not the same thing as a relationship at the beginning. You know, at the beginning it's all affirming and this and that and fun and nice. And, but then at some point it turns real. And that's when you might start seeing, you know, more kind of abusive, controlling behaviors because the person is very threatened by the whole idea of emotional intimacy. Or the person could just be using you for some reason, you know, and doing this more consciously. And then they might have something to hide, for instance, or you might be a cover for them. And then they're just, you know, manipulating you the whole time, and that's of course abusive too. So for whatever reason, it ends up being that way. I mean, it ends up being where the person doesn't act without conscience, right? They meet their own need for whatever, you know.
Right.
One way or the other.
You know what? I think
whether it's for control or something else.
I think there's different levels of these people. You know, none of them are good.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them are worse than others. I mean, none of them
definitely
are good in the long run as far as being in a relationship with them. But,
right,
you know, depending on the kind of abuse that, you know, they're presenting to you, I mean, it's still abuse. But some of them are not abusive all of the time. And that's what fools you because, you know, it's like, you know, they try to, you know, pull you up and down, you know, the passive-aggressive kind of abuse or else it's something where they're loving and kind, and then all of a sudden they turn on you, and then you're going back to thinking, well, I'm doing something wrong because they weren't like this before, you know, so you start internalizing the blame, and then they dump it on you. Yes, you're right. It is because of you.
That's true.
You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, so there's all
they
these different emotional
that
things.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I'm not so much interested. No, I was just going to say, I'm not so much interested
that,
in this. No, for the women that, you know, in my specific situation for women with gay husbands, that's like a whole other kettle of fish in addition to the regular kettle. But I'm more concerned because what's happening is that the women who are part of my network, and I see this happening repeatedly, when they come out of their marriages and they're not in a strong state and they've felt rejection for all these years and now they're looking for their next relationship. And sometimes they're jumping far too fast because they think they're healed and it's been 4 months, 6 months, a year, and they haven't even really worked on healing. They think they're healed just because time passed. And I see them getting into the next relationship, which is much worse than the first relationship. Gay isn't the issue anymore. It's the level of the abuser. And that they're willing to, once again, after they thought they're built up, they're back to where they were and even lower. So that's why this information is so critical that, you know, it doesn't have to necessarily be about your husband at the moment who has all these other issues. But in your future relationships, if you don't fix yourself first, you're going to be doomed to find people like this.
Well, that's
but I wanted to talk
true.
About.
I mean, can I comment on that for a minute? I mean, number one.
Please do.
If you had some self-esteem issues to begin with, after you've been betrayed and you've had this failed relationship, I'm putting failed in quotes, you know, I mean, this kind of disaster and loss of general faith in humanity, you know, and then you're going to quickly jump into some other relationship, you're still broken. And when people come out of abusive relationships, as much as they want to get out of them and glad that they finally made the move, it's almost always followed by depression. Because now you have, you know, your focus was on the stress and managing yourself through this relationship or ending the relationship and the steps that you have to take for that and caring for the children, blah, blah, blah. But then when it's over, that's when people experience the most depression. It makes you vulnerable in so many ways. So, yes, you have to at least a year and get therapy. There's a lot of healing that needs to be done from even just a regular divorce, never mind this whole betrayal that you're talking about. Being deceived, and how do you trust yourself after that, right? How do you trust your judgment?
That
is a lot.
Absolutely. How do you trust your judgment? And these, the women in our group, once again, they I always say it's the same as people who are in straight marriages, but a whole lot more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't, if you can only imagine living with a man for 10, 15, 20 years who repeatedly rejects you emotionally, physically, sexually, and makes you feel that you don't exist as a woman. I mean, they rob that feminine spirit for you so that you're just muted from it. You don't have anything left.
Yeah.
You know, you start feeling that, you know, and I think that's God good and right, you know, that women have is to have, you know, sexual desire, to have, you know, to feel good about their partner. Here's a man who's supposed to love you, cherish you, make love to you, and he won't even touch you and won't go near you and makes you feel that there's something wrong with you. That's why he doesn't want you. That takes a really big toll on not only your self-esteem, but your sexual esteem. And some women are so desperate after these marriages, you know, because now they're alone, and now they want to find out what they've been missing for the last 10, 15, 20 years. Sometimes some of our women, the only man they've ever known has been their gay husband, you know, because they were good girls who got married and waited until they got married. So they have no clue what it's like to have a man be with them, want them, intimate with them. So naturally, the first guy who comes along who wants them, they jump. And they're not looking at all the other things. You know, they're just looking
that
somebody
makes
wants
a prime target for a predator who use sex to hook in the woman or the man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, one
sex
of the great things that you've come up with now is, exactly. And I've been reading, you know, the survey that you have that, you know, I'd like for you to talk about because you talk about the intimate partner abuse identification. And what was the purpose of developing this survey?
Well, two reasons. Well, the main thing is that I've had hundreds of people, come to me or call me and say, I can't find a therapist who understands this. I can't find a therapist. And I don't know what to tell them. You know, and I could, you know, talk to them or see a people for a certain amount of time, but I became like, this is impossible. I can't help all these people. And how are we going to help their therapist to learn about emotional abuse? It's just something that's not really well understood. You know, people, you know, everyone kind of has an idea about domestic violence. It's pretty clear cut, right? You get hit, you get pushed, you get knocked down the stairs, okay, whatever, something like that. But therapists don't seem to recognize someone who's, you know, deceptive or manipulative. And they did, on Love Fraud, they did a survey of, I think it was like 1,300 people who talked about their experience of a therapist with, you know, in this situation, either by themselves or with their partner. And only maybe 25% of therapists recognize the problem over time. And it was usually in individual therapy and almost never in couple therapy. So it seems like therapists are snowed by this. And so that was my primary reason for creating this. And the other reason was to help people get clarity that they're experiencing abuse. Because even the situation that you're talking about, Bonnie, with a gay husband, and you don't know he's gay, you just know you're being rejected constantly, or you're having interactions with them that are kind of going nowhere, maybe, or that they end up being your fault, and it's just very painful, and that other person is controlling the relationship, and you don't exist, basically. That's what I mean by subtle abuse. You know, you're feeling this, your self-esteem is going down, your self is kind of just going away, and you're kind of dancing around this person who may be, I don't know, unpredictable or just might be distant. And, you know, and little by little, you're starting to have physical symptoms. You're losing yourself. By physical symptoms, I mean eventually ongoing. It depends on the relationship, but if you're feeling this repeatedly or you're having interactions repeatedly in which you're feeling rejected, you start to have physical reactions to all this stuff too, and it starts to wear you down. You can have post-traumatic stress when you find out about deceit, for instance, or when you're constantly being, you know, rejected or yelled at or whatever the case may be. So that's what
and a lot of our women are
help
in
people get clarity
in relationships
what's
with men.
Going on.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the women are in relationships with men who are controlling, and the reason for that is because men have no control over themselves, so they like to control all the environment around them, which means their
mm-hmm.
wives, you know,
mm-hmm.
their kids, because and a number, I would say the majority of the women who are part of my support network, that is one of the problems. And you do have here on the survey characteristic traits of abusing partners, but you have a section just on coercive control. And here's
mm-hmm.
some of the things that you mention. My partner coerced me into getting plastic surgery. My partner tells mm-hmm. me what clothes he would prefer I wear. My partner is critical if I gain weight. My partner dictates the menus. My partner decides who does what around the home. My partner does not want me to work, be away from the home, or go to school. That one was a very key one to me right here that you just mentioned, because I know
mm-hmm.
that when I was married to my gay husband, I mean, he was very much against me going to school. He was very much against me having friends. You know,
mm-hmm.
he was so afraid his secret would come out. So they try to control everything you're doing. My partner
mm-hmm.
expresses distaste about, picks fights about, or skips social family gatherings, which was another key element. My ex-husband used to start fights with my family that was there, so they didn't
mm-hmm.
even want to come around anymore to try to
mm-hmm.
control that environment. My partner seems to pick fights at times just to put me down or influence the events. My partner appears irritated or uncomfortable when I spend time with family or friends. That was another key thing in my marriage. My partner only wants to go where he feels comfortable and in control. My partner insists on knowing where I am at all times. And I think one of the reasons with in our situations he wants to know where is because they're out there cheating on you and they want to make sure you're not going to catch them.
Right.
My partner checks my texts, my emails, and social media. My partner expresses distaste for the people in my life. My partner violated the agreements of our divorce decree. When I broke up with my partner, he stalked me. Once I broke up with my partner, he did not respect my boundary and kept trying to contact me, which I think a lot of us in my group, you know, some of us just feel that there has to continue being contact, you know. I don't know. How do you feel about that after a marriage? I mean,
does
it ever really end when you have children or?
Not really, no.
I mean, a lot of these men just want to hang on.
Yeah, because they don't want to let go of the control, even when you're separated.
I know.
And they want to punish you.
A lot of them have personality mm-hmm. disorders, so they're just not going to let go until they find some other victim to take your place.
That's true.
But then you have so many good things on this survey, including verbal abuse, emotional abuse and manipulation, physical abuse or violence. You know, and it goes down to financial abuse. This is very interesting because I made a couple notes here. My partner has insisted I give him my whole paycheck. No, I had to do that in my marriage. I got my check. It went right to my ex-husband.
Mm-hmm.
My partner stole money from me or from someone else in my family. Yep, he took, you know, money that my father gave us for business, and he took it.
Mm.
My partner is scamming people out of money during our relationship. He was doing that. Not only during my relationship, but after our relationship. I mean, there's so many of these points in here that I see within my own life from my ex-husband. So, and then you go on to the syndrome of response to abuse, behavioral responses to relationship stress. So, like here, this is what you're saying, syndrome of response to abuse. So talk a little bit about that.
Well,
where you have
if you're in an environment that's stressful all the time, and not that marriages, and even healthy marriages can't be stressful, but it's kind of balanced out by the emotional connection or by resolving conflict, hopefully, you know, and by the support that you give each other, you know, so it's like, you know, it weighs more heavily on the positive. When the stress is more negative and it's ongoing, it starts to kind of condition you to, you know, not it would not feel safe to be yourself and express your emotions. So you have to kind of shut yourself down. You might dissociate in a way, Dissociate sounds like a strong word, but it can mean just like being in kind of denial or being spacey or just being it's being disconnected from yourself to survive the stress. That's one of the kind of survival skills that we have when there's a lot of stress. You become more negative is part of their response. You become more negative about yourself. You might start to have physical problems, you know, more illness. You might have problems concentrating. You might have, you might feel more distractible. You might have more headaches. You know, it does affect you physically and emotionally and psychologically. Mm-hmm. And that's why I call it kind of a syndrome, because it gets worse over time. You start to lose yourself. You start to kind of break down. You know, it's just like if there was a kid, and, you know, I don't, you know, I have a lot of people who, when you initially talk to them about, you know, do you have any, has anyone ever abused you? Do you have any, you know, trauma in your history or anything like that? Sometimes people will say, oh, no, I had good parents, yet they have an addiction and other problems, you know, that, like, okay, well, something went wrong. Or, you know, like, I don't want to blame my parents. My childhood is pretty good. But your self-esteem is really bad. So there's, you know, there's some kind of disconnect there. Even something as subtle for a child as parents constantly correcting them, or them never able to really express who they are, is going to have a really negative effect. So my point being that if you're in an environment where you're getting messages that are negative every day about yourself, you're going to become very anxious. You're going to become depressed. It's going to affect everything about you as a child. And the same is true for an adult. You know, it's almost like being a prisoner of war. That's not as bad as that. But you know what I'm saying? It's like it's a continual negative state you find yourself in which you're helpless to change and basically helpless to get out of. So
I think a lot of times you're coming from a destructive home. I think you're coming from a destructive home, that it's easy to find yourself in these kinds of destructive relationships because that is your normal. When you come from a home where there's mental illness or where there's addiction or alcoholism is addiction, but any kind of addiction.
Neglect.
Yeah, any kind of imbalance. So if you're living in or domestic violence in the home, if you come from dysfunction to start with, something that is dysfunctional seems like you're normal. So you're used to things, which is why I always tell my women, I always tell my women that, you know, you are the legacy for your children. Whatever they see in their home, whatever you're willing to accept is what they are going to be willing to accept, because they don't know any differently. This is how they grew up. That, you know, if dad yells, well, just take it. Well, if you're put down, but if you hear your dad screaming at your mom, well, when it happens, when you find somebody, you just expect it. And you continue this pattern of abuse in your own life as you get older. So I tell women who stay together with their husbands and they tell me, well, I'm doing it for the children. No, you're not doing it for the children, because children who grow up in an unhealthy environment, you are not helping them. You're hurting them. You think you're helping them, but you're not. I know as a fact, I grew up in an unhealthy environment. You know, my parents are very, unhealthy in their behavior towards each other. And they split up one time, and they should have stayed split up. But instead, they went back for another 8 years. And during that time, we saw all kinds of terrible things, you know, my brother and sisters and I. And I thought to myself, why did they ever go back? You know, they were much better off when they weren't together. But I grew up with lots of different phobias and fears and different, you know, I came from a dysfunctional home. And I wasn't functional, so I was willing to settle for things that I shouldn't have been willing to do. And that's why I feel you have to be a role model to your children. When my marriage didn't work out, my children were babies, but I didn't care. I wasn't going to stay in it. I wasn't going to bring them up with the kind of tension and horrible feelings that I was having in that marriage and put it on them just so they can have a home that's not broken. That didn't make any sense to me at all.
Right.
But one of the things I love about what you have on your survey is that, you know, you go through all the different things where you talk about different things about your partner, but then you talk about the person herself. So, for instance, when you're talking about behavioral responses, how you respond, the person taking the survey. For instance, if I get a negative reaction from my partner, I try to be more pleasing. I take on the activities my partner does not like to do. I forget my partner's hostility or negative behavior toward me once he's nice to me again. I find myself changing in me whatever my partner is not comfortable with. I found myself panicking and trying harder to reach my partner if he grows distant. I think I can improve our problems by figuring out how to better love my partner. Even, you know, in other words, you're taking on the responsibility, as I always tell women, you know, when you're in these relationships, you have another category, emotional responses to relational stress. I feel more and more depressed and hopeless in this relationship. I felt suicidal because of the difficulty of the relationship. I've attempted suicide during the relationship. I've had to have a psychiatric hospitalization during the relationship for depression or suicide. I often feel anxious in the relationship. I've begun having panic attacks. And then you go on to negative experience of self. I see myself as a failure in this relationship. I mean, these are all things that center on the person in the relationship.
How about the isolation
Absolutely.
And shame that comes from, you know, being in this, you know, like, you know, the secret you have that you never have sex, for instance, or, you know, those kinds of things that isolate you
Absolutely.
And make you feel shame. And that is very extremely damaging to be isolated in your
Well, for our women, it's especially damaging. You know, we're living in a world that's crazy turned up world today. You know, you would think that when people would hear about a situation of a woman being married to a gay man, that they would feel, you know, wow, look what this woman's been through. Instead, they're cheering the gay man now for coming to terms with himself and being who he is. And living his authentic life. And, you know, everybody's cheering for the gay guy. And, I mean, it's nice that, you know, oh, look, I'm cheering that they came out because I work with hundreds of them every year.
You came honest.
But,
right.
Yeah, I mean, nice you came out.
But the
you
damage
know, look
is done.
The damage,
but the yeah.
the damage is done, and what are you going to do
for
to
sure.
try to fix it? You know, and that's what I work with my men on. I tell them, look, you know, you can't help who you are, but you can help. And I said, you can't. You know, you have to be honest. That's the first thing you have to do. You have to tell your wife that she is not responsible for the failure in your marriage. She's married to a gay man. That's the least that you owe her. But a lot of men will never tell. They're not doing it. You know, they say, it wasn't a great marriage anyway. Well, no, it's not a great marriage. You're a gay man in a straight marriage.
Right.
How is it going to be a great marriage?
Right.
I said, you're not a straight man. You know, they don't. Right. Some of them just don't get it. I mean,
well,
a lot
it's a great
of them
marriage
do.
Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Of course it wasn't. Ask your wife. She knows it wasn't a great marriage. But the point is,
you
know,
the marriage
you go
through
so much.
Responsible.
Exactly. And I can't believe that men actually tell me that. But, you know, I try to work with them, too, to get them to see the light. But I read a lot of this stuff, I mean, are a lot of people in this situation, do you think? Are there more unhappy marriages than happy relationships?
Well, there's one thing to have a happy, unhappy marriage, and sometimes, like you said, like with your parents or something, you know, there's a lot of fighting. It's just, you know, it's not, maybe they're incompatible or maybe someone's got an addiction. Okay, addictions make people act like they have no conscience, right? But if they never want to get help with their addiction, they're just causing destruction to themselves and their whole family. So that's, you know. It could be another situation where you have something like this unintractable. It's not going to change. But relationship conflict, you know, and divorce in that situation is one thing. But when you're with someone who's controlling and abusive, that is much more destructive. Okay? And like, the reason I made all of these questions, all of these detailed questions, because if you ask someone, are you in an, you know, I mean, sometimes I can see that someone's in a relationship with someone who cannot, doesn't have empathy, you know, who can't, you know, can't relate, can't connect to them, can't love, basically. But they say, well, you know, he's not, it's not so bad, or I don't think I am. But, you know what I mean? It's unclear in their head until they start, like, kind of really taking it apart. And that's why I have these questions, because sometimes people will say, oh, yeah, that happens. That, oh, yeah, that's emotional abuse. Yes, that's what it is. You know, it's like the light goes on and they can see it. And then,
uh-huh.
you know, you want to see if a person can actually change. And if someone, if someone in, you know, the domestic violence cycle that everybody knows about, you know, the romance,
uh-huh.
the abuse, and then the making up kind of cycle that people seem to know about, most of those people are not without conscience. You know, they might be for the moment, but they usually are regretful and remorseful, but then they can't control themselves and they end up doing something violent again, right? But the problem lies, even in that situation, with someone who has no conscience, meaning they can never feel remorse. You know, they can never say, and like some of the guys you just described, they can never say, I see where my actions hurt you. That's the difference right there. Because
I don't know. I think they can say it, but they don't really mean it.
Right. I mean,
I think they, you know, I think that some of them say it, but
differently. You know, if you mean something, if you really have empathy, this is, you know, in a relationship. I mean, we all do are selfish. We all do things that are hurtful in a relationship. But at some point, if you see like, oh, I get it. You know, I'm doing this and that really causes you pain. I don't want to cause you pain. I love you. I don't want to do that anymore. And then you have the motivation for change, right? So then you want to, you're aware of that and you're kind of horrified at yourself maybe and you don't want to do it again. So you become more sensitive and you respond differently to your partner. That's the thing that these people I'm talking about can't do. You know, the people who are abusive, controlling, and do it without conscience. They can never look at themselves. They can never take responsibility, and therefore they can't change, right? Where's the
right,
motivation
but I don't
to
think
change
they,
if
I
you
think
don't
they
empathize?
Fool you, though.
You can't empathize. They what?
Right, but I think they're very good at fooling people because, you know, they pretend they're going to change, and they change momentarily, and then they're back to their old selves. And it's just like
yeah,
I tell the women when their husbands – when women tell me that their husbands leave, and, you know, they're very distraught, the women, because a lot of times their husbands leave, and the women thought they were having a happy marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so distraught over the fact that their husbands are gay, they met somebody else, they're leaving them for this other guy. And then a month later, 2 months later, they come home because, you know, I call it the, you know, revisited honeymoon. Period, where they went out there, they met some guy, the guy dumps them, and now they're running home to the only security and love that they know, and so excited because now their husband is home, and he finally saw that, you know, this is not the way he wants to live, he loves his wife, and I warned them, I said, this is not going to last. It may happen for a month, it may happen for 2 months, but I'll bet you anything you want that it's not going to be lasting more than 2 or 3 months, and he's going to be miserable again because he doesn't belong in this marriage. And, you know, a lot of times women get very angry when I tell them that, but then they come back to me in the next month or 2 months or 3 months and say, you were right. He didn't want to be here. You know, it's just that they run back, and you have this false hope that something can work that's just not workable, and I think that's the problem with a lot of women in general. You know, we're socialized as women to be caretakers. From the time that we're born, you know, we're always taking care. You know, it's a woman's job to be the mother. You know, you have the maternal instinct. You're always trying to help people.
More empathetic.
And, you know, and a lot of times that women who come from dysfunctional homes, you know, they're even much more so the caretakers because they feel that need to have to be that. That's what their role is. So it's easy to see how you can fall into these relationships because you always think that you can, quote, fix people
up. Or make
and
up.
And I always say that
people
can't be fixed.
Right.
Right. I mean,
yeah.
you're looking to
Absolutely.
Fix something that's broken.
Mm-hmm.
And I always I have this as my mantra on my homepage that you cannot fix a broken man, but he can break you. And this is what I tell women.
That's a
you know,
good
you're
one.
Not going to fix him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the truth. You know, they're going to break you before you fix them. They're not looking to get fixed. They're looking to break you down so they can control you.
Right, right. Exactly. I didn't know that aspect you were talking about where they like come out, go out and, you know, with someone else and then come back again. I didn't. So I guess there's some kind
of, it happens
you know,
a lot.
Again, you're getting kind of like, you know, like sucked into their own conflict about it. With, you know, and of course they're not being honest with themselves, and of course the women, I guess, are willing to believe that. You know, like
they're
I guess I could see it. I could totally see it. Why? Yeah, I could see why. Oh, well, I guess he was just having some kind of, I don't know what, but he's not really gay.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Because yeah. I mean, I did that with my relationship with you know, the guy I was with, not for I guess a few years. But I left, and then like 6 months later, I had a weak moment. You know, like the whole the sadness of losing what you thought was, you know, a lifelong relationship. And like, you know, looking back, it's like, what was I thinking? Because, but it was all that thing like, oh, you know, I'll change. I'll do anything you want. Let's go to therapy. I want to have the kind of relationship you had with your first husband, the guy, you know, the one who died. And, you know, blah, blah. Yeah, it sounded all good. And so I guess, you know, got sucked back in.
It's easy to get sucked in when you want to believe something should be able to work. And,
of
you know,
course.
I think sometimes we think with our hearts and not with our minds, as I tell my women, you know, it's easy to be sucked in back and sucked back into this. I mean, I'm certainly one who's done it, you know, and you can't keep beating yourself up over it. You have to make it a learning experience. You have to learn that no matter how much you try, it's not going to change. It's not going to work.
Right.
Cut your losses.
Right.
Move on. Give yourself that chance to, you know who you are, to love yourself enough not to put yourself through this again.
Right.
And that
right.
takes time, and it takes therapy, it takes help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it took
Definitely.
Me years to learn to love me first, and that's not being selfish. I mean, it's
right.
not to
no,
say
not
you think only
all.
Of yourself. Is
it's
that
like
right?
It's like you said before, women are socialized to be compliant, you know. Caretakers,
exactly.
compliant, and to not have good boundaries, not be assertive, right? And some women are, but a lot of us are not. And if you're also have like lower self-esteem, you're going to be, might be less so, maybe. So it's a hard thing to go back out there. Even, you know, like you said, with all that damage and you haven't done enough work healing, you're likely to do the same thing. You know, it might not be a gay man, or it might be, but it might, you know, but it's likely to be someone else who's going to take advantage of you. Like you said, people like that tend to have a radar, people who are not
exactly.
as good as. And then we do this thing, and I see women do this all the time. Like, watch, I tell them, watch what you do on the first date or the second date. Are you, like, showing this person that you're easy to, like, you're very flexible and compliant and accommodating, and it's so hard for women to do something that's different than that. You know, like their whole life they've been like that, so it's hard for them to say, "I don't like you enough. I don't want another date," for instance, or, "Oh yeah, I wanted to go to the movies, but if you want to do that, we'll do that." I mean, those are little early warning signs that you're doing the same thing that you always did. Watch out. You might be
exactly.
with someone who is already controlling you.
And, you know, I think it's hard as women sometimes because, you know, the women you were talking about who aren't like us, and I always raise my hand first because I'm guilty of everything. Every single symptom you put in here, I am guilty of. But the thing is that it's hard because I think that people perceive women who are strong and who have boundaries as being, you know, excuse the word, but being bitches.
Yeah.
And that we don't want to feel like we're like that. You know, like men will say, well, she's a bitch because, you know, she only wants what she wants and she doesn't care about my feelings. So because we don't want to be perceived that way and because, you know, we are caring good women, we don't understand how to set boundaries. We let everybody stomp all over our boundaries.
Yeah,
and that's
right.
how we end up being on your survey. And like I say, so many of those characteristics I'm guilty of also. But I wanted to see if you could discuss a little bit because how this relates to post-traumatic stress disorder, because a lot of people misunderstand that, except women in my group really understand it because they're living through it. But could you talk a little bit about that?
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. And by the way, a guy who thinks you're a bitch for putting down a boundary is bad guy. Bad guy.
Exactly.
So post-traumatic stress disorder, do you want me to go through the criteria of post-traumatic stress disorder?
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
Well, there's, you know, it's different for every person. But the definition of traumatic stress is that when we experience something that is usually life-threatening, but it can be psychologically threatening. You know, like finding out your husband's gay would be a traumatic stress. You go into like this state of shock to begin with. And that state of shock, during that time, you might experience things like disrupted sleep or nightmares or flashbacks or feeling completely disoriented or be dissociating from yourself. You know, and down the line, you might feel more things like depression, anxiety, panic attacks. Don't have a good criteria still for kind of the ongoing complex post-traumatic stress. Supposedly, they're going to accommodate that more in the next coding. But basically, it can start out like that where you feel a lot of shock and these symptoms of shock. But over time, if you're in an environment where you're getting rejected all the time or verbally abused or anything like that or deceived, it starts to wear on your body. It starts to affect your psychology and your physiology in a more permanent way. You know, like you might have ongoing anxiety and panic attacks, ongoing depression. You might have develop a chronic illness. There are a lot of chronic illnesses now that they've directly related to stress and trauma. Did you know that? They're doing a lot more research on those things now, you know, like autoimmune diseases, certain heart diseases, and cancer. So they have a direct effect, like a permanent kind of effect on your nervous system, ongoing, on your hormones, on everything.
So post-traumatic stress, if you live through a negative situation or, you know, a destructive situation, years later, you know, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but you can go into a situation where something will just, boom, strike you, and you're back to where you were at that particular moment of abuse.
Right. That's called a flashback. They call that a bottom-up hijacking, meaning that suddenly it feels like you're reliving the moment. Not that you think you're back in, you know, 2004 or anything, but, you know you're in the present, but the emotions and the thoughts, the experience is as if it's happening right now. And that could also include things like shame, helplessness. Helplessness is a big part of it. You know, help you feel like you're in the face of this threatening situation and you're helpless to do anything about it. It kind of just overwhelms you, immobilizes you.
So you have the Warrior app for this. And I was so, so impressed when I first learned about your Warrior app and just the amazing things it can do. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's called Mind Warrior. And it's about mindfulness, which is a way to help trauma. It's about first recognizing an emotional trigger or a trigger of traumatic shock or a flashback or panic, you know, anything that is kind of an overwhelming emotional reaction, to identify it and to mindfully connect to it so that then you can help yourself. And then it has resources where you can help yourself kind of move out of that state, that bad emotional overwhelming state. And it helps you to track it mindfully. And those are the things that help people heal from trauma, help to override the damaged neural pathways, you might say, by practicing ways to manage it and make yourself feel calmer or better or just grounded, safe, all of those
things. Can you make some examples of some of those
ways? In the moment. Yeah, if you suddenly have a flashback like you're talking about, the first thing to do is to become aware of what's happening to you, to tell yourself that I'm in a flashback. I'm in a, you know, my brain has just connected to some memory that now it has kind of burst forward and I'm feeling right now. Just that little bit of awareness helps. Because now you can do something to help yourself. Even though you feel completely overwhelmed by the emotion, you're not completely immersed in it. You have a little bit of detachment. So then you can, you know, in the app, it brings you to a page where you can select something to help yourself. Like there's a relaxation exercise, and which is an audio that you can listen to. It has suggestions like take a mindful walk, feel your feet on the ground, maybe do some prayer meditation, some journaling, call a friend for support, do an exercise where you feel safe in your body, hug a pet. You know, there are a lot of things like that. But while you're doing it, you're kind of still mindfully connected to your body. And then you, there's a page that brings you to where you now track how you're feeling in your body now that you've held your dog for 5 minutes or something like that. And you see that you've had an effect. You've made a difference in that, you know, the force of that initial reaction. You've now been able to help yourself a little bit. And if you do that every time over and over, you start to, you know, your brain starts to change.
I think a good point you made also when I originally found out about your Warrior app, was that this is something that you can use also with your therapist, that you can sit and discuss, you know, as your, you know, at your weekly appointments, the things that were bothering you or what came up or what triggered you, because you have it all there. Is that correct? Am I phrasing that correctly?
It's all stored in the app, and also you can send a log to your therapist. In other words, you know, you go through all that exercise, and it's all logged in, everything you've, you know, put in, inputted. You can send the log to your therapist. So it can help you be accountable. It can help you be more self-aware, and it can help your therapist see what you've been going through all week. Yes.
I think that's wonderful. You also run online support groups. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. I've been running an online support group for people in destructive relationships every other week. It's just a call-in group, similar to what we're doing, except we have more people on the line. And it's just a support group. You know, people can talk about what they're struggling with, give feedback to each other, of information to each other, then they can, well, I won't go into that, but now I have someone who's doing it every other week, so I'm offering it every week on a Sunday at 5.
That's wonderful. And
if
somebody
would like to join it, they can go to my website, fill out the form at the bottom, and say they want to join, and I will send them the link information.
That's wonderful. And if they're listening to this broadcast, they have a copy of the link to your website because it's on there.
Okay.
Also, yes, so they can get your information for the survey on there.
Right,
and also
the survey,
for
questionnaire is a downloadable PDF, and it's free. You can, anyone can take it. But for another few weeks, there's a survey open, and there's a link on that page where the survey is, where you can take, I mean, where the questionnaire is, where it'll take you to a survey if you want to do it. And we're just, it's a database, and it's private. You know, no one can see what you're doing, and it's anonymous. So you put your input in if you want. It takes a little time, but hopefully we'll be able to get some good data from the survey if anyone is interested. You know,
and also,
well,
you have a number of, I think the research is so important because the more we learn about this, the better prepared we are for our future relationships, not only for us, but also for your children. You know, once again, if you come from a destructive home, it's very easy to see how your children can fall into your same patterns. It's really important to learn how to help them so that they don't fall into the same patterns that you fell into. And you can be honest with them and say to them, look, I made mistakes, but you don't have to keep making them on my behalf. You know, you can change and see what the problems are. And that's why the more information that we gather on these kinds of subjects, the more important it is to all of us who are going through this.
Definitely.
Because you, not only for yourself, but for your future generations.
Yes.
I also was listening to some of your videos today on YouTube, so I want to let our readers, our listeners know that if you go to YouTube and you look up Marianne, you'll see her videos on there. Initially, I learned about Marianne through Donna Anderson, through Love Fraud. Donna, you know, a lot of our, has been a guest on our show a number of times, and a lot of our members, you know, read her newsletters and her books. And, you know, she's been a tremendous help in helping us understand how the situation happens and how easy it is to be frauded, defrauded, yeah, to meet people who have this kind of behavior. And that's why it's a wonderful thing that you're doing with Donna. And she has really so much valuable information, and you're part of that, right?
Yeah, well, I actually did those videos on YouTube as a kind of prerequisite toward her marketing the workshops that some of us did on Love Fraud, that they're still available. They're for professionals, you know, for therapists.
Right.
But, you know, that's kind of a slow thing. There aren't too many therapists that seem to are getting that information. But that's why I made those videos. But I like what you're saying, and I think that's to emphasize, you know, that love fraud, it's a fraud, you know, and even when people don't come from necessarily really bad homes, you could end up being deceived, you know? I mean, that's some of it might be from, you know, vulnerability. I mean, everyone has some kind of vulnerability, even if it's just that they trust people too much, you know, or give people the benefit of the doubt or something like that. But, you know, the person you're with is tricking you on purpose. And that's not your
fault. Exactly. And once again, I'd like to emphasize that it's really important to do the work you need to do so you can avoid, you know, walking into these relationships again.
Yes.
It's better to be alone than to have to be with somebody who's going to abuse you. And,
definitely.
You know, I always say the first year, just stay by yourself and, you know, get the help you need. And for me, a year would never have been enough. I mean, I needed a lot of years before I was able to evolve into a different kind of person. Yeah, no, I mean, I waited a long, long time. But I wasn't going to put myself back in that situation. Oh, yeah.
Right.
I mean, so much to uncover.
Just the grief, you know, I mean, when you think about, you know, grief, if someone dies, it takes about average like 3.5 years to recover, right? And that's just to kind of get, you know, do the process of letting go and the sadness and all the emotions and then rebuilding a new identity and all that. It takes a long time. So this is not a death, but it's kind of a death. You know, it's like you're identity, your life, everything gone away. And you can't just kind of bounce back real quick. It takes a long time to process that and to rebuild your new self. So a year at the
and
at
also
minimum,
to process
minimum.
On how you allowed and also to process how you allowed yourself to stay there for so long. And that's the point I bring up to the women. Is that the fact you were able to stay at this level of abuse for so long and allowed it. That's where you really have to find out. Well, Marianne, I can't believe we're at the end of our hour, and I'm just so thrilled that, you know, you took the time to come. I really wanted to have you on the show because it's been a while, and people need to see what you're doing and how it can help them. So I thank you so much. And don't, ladies, when you listen to this broadcast, you see the information there, the website. Go there and see how you can get help because this is such an important source of help for so many of us.
So,
Marianne, thank you so much again.
Thankful, Bonnie, for you.
You know,
I'm so inspired by what you've done.
Thank you so much, and you're a hero to me for sure. Thank you, and I'll be in touch with you again. And
my
thank
pleasure.
You so much for everything. And ladies, have
all.
A wonderful week, and we'll be with you soon again. All right, good night.
Good night. Take care. Good night.